Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Fionnuala Jones and Michelle Uller and Brian Lloyd are here with us once again. Good afternoon to you all. Okay, Brian. Nosferatu.
Yeah.
Another. Though I'm glad to see that Hollywood has finally conceded to the enormous worldwide demand for yet another vampire movie.
Yeah. No. In fairness, okay, you mock, but you know
I
what?
Do.
This is genuinely one of the most anticipated films of the year. It's directed by Robert Eggers, who previously did The Northman. He did The Lighthouse, which
most anticipated film of this year. So in the last 3 days, people are being going, "Oh my god,
it's been nonstop, man! Been nonstop." All right. No, but genuinely, this actually has been really highly anticipated. And like I said, so Robert Eggers previously directed The Northman, he did The Lighthouse, Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, and he did The Witch, which is kind of his debut. This is inspired by Nosferatu, which was the 1920s German expressionist horror film, and then just the story of Dracula itself. So it's kind of a mishmash of the two. Bill Skarsgård plays the title character, but he is... For, I would say, 97% of the film is in complete shroud. You only just hear his voice.
Mm.
And it's a very... There were a lot of choices made with that voice. And then the rest of the time, we're following Lily Rose Depp as she is kind of, like, being possessed and driven insane by...
Right, Nosferatu. So is this a bit of, like, old arty vampire film rather than...
No, it's actually more closer to a straight-up horror, if I'm totally honest. Because, the whole thing about Dracula and, like, vampires is it's kind of, like, it's sexy, you know, that sort of way. Like, you look at, like, the Francis Ford Coppola one, and it was a sort of a metaphor for AIDS and promiscuity in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And then you go further back, like, to... Like Frank Langella, that one that he did in the 70s, and that was like Dracula as this sort of like dark and mysterious romantic figure. And then you go even further back to, you know, Christopher Lee, and there was, you know, sort of a Red Scare communism thing almost going on. So like it's always been metaphor. The metaphor for this one, if you want to look for it, is that it's basically what if, you know, Count Orlok, Dracula, the vampire, what if he was just a creepy ex? What if he was this... No, but that's really it. It's like, what if he...
Okay, yeah.
Sounds possible.
We broke up because he wanted to suck my blood.
Well, this is it, yeah. As in, like, what if he was this abusive ex that just wouldn't leave the partner alone and was, like, turning her life toxic as a result and turning her friends against her and turning her life against her? Like.
Yeah, okay. And we live in time... It's a John Crowley.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a hard bitten science fiction action film.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As he is known to do.
No, yeah. This is kind of in the vein of Arthur Hiller's Love Story, which is that it's this big weepy melodrama about a young couple. It's the way it's kind of told, though, is that it moves in different paces. So it will start off kind of, you know, as they meet each other, and then it'll jump forward to kind of the end of their relationship, spoiler alert, and then come towards the middle, then move back to the start, and then kind of moves it all over the place. But it's really held together by the performance of Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. Like, the chemistry they have is just jumps out of the screen. Like, they're so good together. Like.
Okay.
And, yeah, bring the tissues, because you'll be bawling your eyes out.
And is there songs in it?
No.
That's it. Doesn't he usually have a few
He does love a good old needle drop, does John Crowley. Like, obviously, like, Brooklyn, I mean, that bit with the Gloaming, I mean, my God, I mean, you can't watch that, especially over Christmas. Like, you can't watch that scene over... You know the scene I'm talking about?
No.
So there's a scene in Brooklyn when Saoirse Ronan is basically feeding, like, the homeless Irish people in New York. And there's this one scene where the guy stands up and sings this old song. And he does it in Irish, and it was one of the guys from The Gloaming, I think it was. And you can just see her, it's like single tear goes down her cheek, and it just kills you because she's obviously feeling homesick, and it's Christmas and all the rest of it. And yeah, so.
Oh, crikey. Yeah. Right, okay, well, that's a cheerer upper. Now, Missy.
Vino.
Yeah, is it?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
you might have detected a certain amount of resistance in my tone, Michelle. I think non-alcoholic wine is a contradiction in terms.
This is non-alcoholic.
I know. Yeah. I was waiting.
Why do you think you like the smell of it, Brian?
That makes sense. Look, I can drink this.
Yeah,
okay,
you can drink
all right.
So I have two wines here for you today. One is an alcohol liberated wine, which is how they refer
this
to
is
it.
This is nice.
It's alcohol. I know. Oh my god. So thrilled. So we have an alcohol-free wine for anyone who is looking for an alcohol-free drink this month or in general. And I would say, like, I am definitely a cynic of the alcohol-free wine. Not the NOLO category, but alcohol-free wine. He's down that. And that's hash really brown. Nice. I know. Yeah. There's more there.
Is this alcohol? Okay, sorry,
Brian. That was more my alcohol.
All right, okay.
And then we have a wine that is a wine that if you received some wine over Christmas and
it's like
thinking,
apple juice.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's delicious.
Sorry, yeah, it's like apple juice.
Do you want
sorry.
To do the wine?
No, I don't, sorry.
And so the other bottle that I have, it's kind of an example of, say you got a nice bottle at Christmas, or you think it's a nice bottle and you don't know what to do with it. Do you store it? Do you drink it? How do you know? What? Where do you look for advice? And, you know, when do you bother drinking it? So two totally different styles.
Okay.
Two things that you definitely do in January with wine.
When it says it's been liberated from alcohol, does that mean they made it as real wine and then they boiled the crap out of
no.
it?
No, but that is a very, you definitely have done some research. So typically with an
I've been bitten before.
You've been bitten. So have you tried it, lad? Come on, have
very
a taste
nice.
Of it. It's very nice.
It's like apple juice.
I would hazard a guess to say that if no one knew this was alcohol liberated, that you would just sip, no, the red definitely has alcohol.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. But the white, but you drink the white and you wouldn't actually know. Now, what I would say about it might be a few degrees a bit too warm. Definitely these wines, they should be 5 degrees or less.
Okay.
But to make an alcohol-free wine as opposed to non-alcoholic, you have to make it like a regular process and then take the alcohol out of it. And typically to make an alcohol-free wine, you boil the bejesus out of it.
Yeah.
And then because you've done that, you've stripped out a lot of the good things. So then you have to add in like artificial aromatizers and this sugar and this and that.
Oh,
so then
gosh.
What you end up with is like a badly put back together jigsaw without what it's meant to have.
Yes.
Because that's the process. It's fermentation. But with a lot of the high quality alcohol free ones. So this is called Zeno. It's from Spain. It retails 14, 15 euros. So a lot of people mightn't even spend 14, 15 euro on a bottle of white as it is. Never mind an alcohol free one.
Yeah.
The grape is Viura and they do it at 27 degrees thereabouts, so what's considered cool, so that you're not boiling the bejesus out of it, that you then have to replace it with a lot of synthetic things.
Yeah.
So look it. I think it's nicest.
It's grape juice.
It's grape juice.
It's grape
definitely
juice.
Grape juice.
Yeah.
But it's amazing because Brian doesn't like white wine, and that's nice for you.
Brian doesn't drink.
I don't drink full stuff.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I have to say, like, not to be main or whatever, but 14 quid for what is essentially grape juice.
Yeah.
I don't want to be poo-pooing it. I'm sure it's great, but I'm just like...
Well, it's funny, like, because I would often
just drink Sidona, like,
yeah, and I was saying to Fionnuala before we came in, if someone was saying to me, oh, I want to get an alcohol-free gift for someone, and I'd say, well, get them chocolates. Because if they don't drink wine and then you give them an alcohol-free wine, it's like, it's not a great gift. You know, you have to like wine and then...
Be really into it, and then take
that extra leap to then... explore the alcohol-free. I think alcohol-free cocktails can oftentimes
offer a lot more.
I
must say alcohol-free beer has come on in leaps and bounds.
Absolutely. But that is the nicest one on the market.
Okay, well.
And that I can confidently say, having tried. And look, did you like it, Fionnuala?
I like it, yeah.
Yeah, and for alcohol-free, it tastes like wine. It's a great
idea. Does wine normally taste like this?
No.
Oh, okay, all right. Because
Absolutely not.
As close as you can get to it.
Okay, right. Which is not close at all.
So the grape in this is Viura. It's the grape if you were to have a white Rioja. But the wine is Zeno.
I thought it was missing out. Like, I was like, this tastes great. Am I missing? Have I been?
Yeah, yeah. Right, like, all these years. Right, so Batman Part 2 has been delayed. Oh, no.
Shocker, yeah.
Yeah.
But delayed... I just can't fathom. In some ways, I feel like, will it matter? Because I feel like we complain when sequels are too far out and we complain when they're too close together. It's been delayed to 2027. So it was originally slated for October 2nd, 2026. It's been pushed out now again to October 1st, 2027. They've said it's just down to, Matt Reeves has said they're not finished the script. They're still tinkering around the script or whatever. James Gunn, the DC studios co-head, has said, look, not too concerning. Kind of a normal amount of time for sequels. Which, I mean, could you view it like that? Can you look at it as a way of like drumming up anticipation?
Yeah.
Well, Superman is all this year, like, so like I'd say they're probably trying to
focus on that and probably space it out a bit. But do I care about Superman though? I don't know.
The dog. He's a dog.
I am the dog, Crypto. Yeah.
Very here for Crypto.
But that's
the spotlight.
Like, you know, there's a dog in it.
Yeah, I'm in. Like you see, as soon as the
dog's like sold.
And it's like the film is about the dog.
I'm in.
Yeah,
like, Crypto.
Yeah.
Like he's and like this is okay.
I don't think the film is about the dog, though.
No, yeah. It's not. But like,
no, but it would be good if it was.
Yeah,
yeah, like somebody's dropped down a well. Crypto, what are we gonna do?
Hello, call me.
Better.
What are you saying?
No, it's just that, like, I saw the trailer when I was away on holidays, and I saw it. I was literally in an airport watching the trailer, and I loved it. I thought it was so great. It was so uplifting and hopeful. Like, Jesus, that's what I've been hoping for with Superman for so long, is this idea that, like, he is the best of us, like, you know, that kind of way. And it seemed lovely, like, and they had the bit of the John Williams soundtrack, and then seeing Crypto the Dog, like, yeah, I don't mind. Like, give Superman the runway, like, you know what I mean?
And they did look different.
It did.
In the Clark Kent thing.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. They, like when you had Henry Cavill, like, he's built like a tank and he walks out and it's like, you're clearly Superman. You've just got glasses on. Whereas when David Corenswet did it, like, he looked the part, like, the suit looked kind of big and baggy on him and he looked kind of dorky, but, you know, then when he's Superman, he's, you know, fantastic. Like.
Okay. When's that coming out?
July something.
July, yeah, I think that's this
July 11th. Yeah, it's this year, yeah. It's July 11th.
Yeah, so that makes sense then why they're not waiting. They're not. Yeah. But it means we won't get to see Barry Keoghan as the Joker for a long, long time. Because obviously that's what was teased at the end of Batman Part 1. Sorry, spoiler for a film that came out in 2022. But anyway.
Maybe Barry Keoghan's changed his mind. Maybe that's the delay.
Maybe, because again, there was a lot of talk around what villains were going to be in this. And James Gunn was said definitively about certain villains that weren't in this. But it's very definitively teased that the Joker is in Arkham. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the Riddler's still alive at the end of Batman 1, so I don't know. We'll see.
Right, Oscar predictions. The voting is going to start next week.
January 8th and runs until the 12th. And we've got, like, I remember the last time I talked about this, it was very, my point was that it was kind of very much still all to play for and it wasn't really clear and stuff like that. And with these galas and stuff like that, there's still a lot that could change. But I thought there was kind of some early predictions again from one of the main reporters in The Hollywood Reporter. Current predictions for Best Actress. He's putting it that Demi Moore, like, could sneak in for a nomination for The Substance.
Wow.
Which we talked about at the time. We were like, I was like, I'd love to see her get it. I love her performance. I love that film. The Academy doesn't really like horror. It's too weird.
Yeah.
But, like, and now, I still don't think she'll win in that category. Again, these predictions are, so as I said, Demi Moore for The Substance, Angelina Jolie for Maria, Mikey Madison for Anora, Carla Sofia Gascon for Emilia Perez, and Cynthia Erivo for Wicked.
I'd say that's the winner, I think. I would put
the winner.
She's going to win. I will put 20 quid down now. It's going to be Cynthia Erivo for Wicked. She's going to win Best Actress.
Okay.
I'll put 20 quid on her right now.
Okay.
With everyone.
Yeah.
I respect your judgment on this. Not your judgment on wine, but
sure. She's going to win it. She is going to win it.
It's just a bit of a weird category when you consider all of these films have been, with probably the exception Wicked, they've all been fairly divisive. And also maybe Anora, maybe Mikey Madison's performance, but like.
It's too
soon for her.
It's too soon. And also, as well, the kind of the subject matter of it, like, it's about a sex worker. The Academy generally tends to not like that. It's probably a bit too adult as well, because it's Sean Baker, so there's a lot of sexual content in the film. It's brilliant. Anora is fantastic, one of the best films I've seen this year or last year. But, you know, it's not. She's not going to win it for that. She'll get nominated for sure. She won't win it though.
And no chance for Saoirse Ronan.
Again, I will say this is just one person's predictions, but yeah, they're not Saoirse Ronan left out in the cold in. For Blitz. And what was The Outrun? I feel like The Outrun, like,
I would have thought The Outrun would have been there.
It would have been the higher one. It was the better film.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. 100%. It was a great film.
Yeah, but again, it's English, or not English, sorry, it's Scottish. I should be shot for that. It's a Scottish film. You know,
they probably didn't have the money to go doing all that stuff.
That's like, I mean, this is the thing that people forget is that, like, the Oscar campaigns cost a bomb.
Mm.
Like, you know, when The Quiet Girl went for the Oscars, I mean, that cost a lot of money. Like, so, you know, it's not done lightly. Do you know that kind of way? And it is often the case that some of the best films of the year get completely overlooked at the Oscars purely because the studio just didn't have the money or couldn't commit the resources to making a campaign for it. Like, you know?
Well, maybe that's how Demi sneaks in, because, like, she's been everywhere and that film has been everywhere, whether you liked it or not.
Yeah. And she was brilliant in it. But again, I think it's too weird of a film to get in there. I could be wrong. I'd love to be wrong, but...
Yeah. Okay, speaking of weird of a film, should we talk about Nosferatu?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, Nosferatu coming up after this break.
Come to me. Come to me. A guardian angel. A spirit of comfort. A spirit of any celestial sphere. anything. Hear my call. Come to me.
There you go. That's Nosferatu there, doing a bit of heavy breathing towards the end. So this isn't the traditional Dracula story.
No.
Right.
So a little bit of cinematic history. So in the 1920s, there was a German director called F.W. Murnau. He created, he basically wanted to make the Dracula story, but he didn't want to pay for the rights. So he basically just took the story, changed all the names to it, made the film. Bram Stoker's widow got wind of it, sued him, sued their company. More or less had all prints of the film destroyed. Nosferatu was nearly going to be a lost film, which is basically just all, you know, prints of it were lost. It was rediscovered, went back into public domain, and then it's just become kind of, you know, part of like cinematic history. This, you know, the idea of like Count Orlok is completely different from Dracula in that, you know, he's disgusting. I mean, this is the whole point, is it's like, you know, when you see it in the 1920s film, like, you know, he has this big, huge nose and he's the ears out like this. And he's got like the little rat kind of teeth. And they've kind of followed that into this, because for most of the film, you don't really see Nosferatu. You hear his voice all the time and you kind of see like, you know, his hand, and his hand is like covered in cuts and he's got big, long fingers and nails coming out of it. Or, you know, you might kind of catch like a glimpse of his cheek. And again, it's all kind of gnawed off and stuff like that. The idea is that he is much more of a physical presence than an actual character, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though he does have dialogue. But again, it's very much like pronouncements as opposed to back and forth dialogue, you know. But yeah, no, I mean, it's completely, it has the same kind of structure of Dracula in that, you know, real estate agent goes off to a castle, is captured in the castle. The creature in the castle then returns to where the real estate agent is from with the intent of stealing away his wife to become her bride. And everyone around the couple is kind of drawn into it as well. So, yeah, it's the same structure, but just names are different and the vibe is different.
Okay, so but it's set in the US then?
No, it's set in Germany.
It's set
in Germany in the town of Wisburg. And, you know, like Transylvania is never mentioned. It's always just like, oh, he's from Dacia or like beyond Bohemia. Like, again, it's all sort of shrouded in mystery. And that's kind of the point, I think, because, again, you know, vampires and Dracula is such a well-trodden idea. It's been done to death. Like, you've literally had Dracula Dead and Loving It with Leslie Nielsen as a parody, like, and then like you've had like, you know, the 70s one with Frank Langella where he's a romantic character, and then the Francis Ford Coppola one, I think, was sort of a melding of all of them. Like, you had the theatrics, you had the kind of the romance with Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder, and then there was sort of a historical element of it as well, because it was about, you know, the Turks and Constantinople and the fall of the rise of Islam and blah, whereas in this it's purely based on F.W. Murnau's film. But the way that it kind of approaches it is that Nosferatu is basically just this abusive ex that won't leave Lily Rose Depp alone and is just tormenting and abusing her still, even though she's tried to get away from him.
You know? And did they previously have a relationship?
It's kind of, it's basically that, like, Nosferatu came to her when she was a young woman and terrorized her when she was young, and she kind of like says like, oh, I saw comfort in his arms. But it's really like he had a hold on her, like he had taken control of her and possessed her, like, you know, that sort of way. Like, because the thing about Robert Eggers' films is, whether it's, you know, The Witch or The Lighthouse or The Northman, you know, magic and curses and effigies are real. It's never sort of like, oh, I don't think this is real, maybe this is supernatural. No, it's 100% real. Like, if you go back and watch The Lighthouse, when they kill the albatross, that sets off the entire, all of the bad stuff in the film, like, you know. And in this as well, you have Aaron Taylor Johnson's character, who is initially trying to poo-poo it and say, oh, well, it's just hysteria. No, it's our wandering womb. And it's, again, kind of talking about the misogyny of the era and the idea of, like, women were prone to hysteria and all this kind of stuff. Whereas when Willem Dafoe's character comes in, he goes, nope, it's a vampire. It's 100% a vampire. I've seen it before. I know what it is. This is what it is. And then the film follows that completely logically, you know, that kind of way. He has to be killed, but he can't be killed by a stake. He has to be done in such a way. And yeah.
Yeah. And what era is it set in?
like the 1800s. Like it's
Yeah.
So it's not modern at all. Like, okay. And even the dialogue as well, as you heard there, like it's very floral. It's very much, you know, theatrical and all the rest of it, but it's brilliant. Like it locks you in. Like it's so, you know, oppressive. Like, I mean, I was watching it in the Lighthouse the other day and like the walls were literally vibrating from the noise coming out of the screen. Like, you know, that kind of way. Like the voice that Bill Skarsgård has is so deep and so resonant. Like you can literally hear the walls vibrating. Like it's brilliant.
Okay.
So definitely go see it in the cinema. Do not wait. Go see this in the cinema.
Right, and William Dafoe is in it as a...
as a crazy, crazy professor. Just hamming it.
What a stretch.
Hamming it up.
Yeah.
But again, and he's great. But you always love it. Whatever he turns up, he's always having fun. He's always enjoying it the most out of everyone involved. Lily Rose Depp as well, who I've kind of dismissed as a nepo baby. She is fantastic in this. Gives such a vital, physical performance in it. She's like vomiting everywhere. It's brilliant.
And is it... is everybody being a little bit camp? Or is it a bit knowing?
There's a hint. But it works. Like, it works. Like, it is freaky as hell. There is literally a vampire eating people. There are rats everywhere. It is kind of Oh, no, it's gank. It's a horror. Like, if you're any way kind of squeamish about it, forget about it. Don't bother. Because this is a straight up horror. Like, when you finally do see Nosferatu, it's disgusting. Like, so...
okay,
well, it's great. It's fantastic. It's so good.
And Lily Rose Depp is she's an estate agent.
No, no, her husband, played by Nicholas Hoult, is the estate agent.
Right,
and she's been left at home. He sets off to sign up Count Orlok to buy this castle in Visburg. That's this like old dilapidated wreck, and he is then coming to the city. But when he arrives in the city, he arrives in a plague ship, and then a plague hits the city, rats everywhere, and.
Gosh, and is Count Orlok really selling the castle, or was that just a ruse?
No, he just wanted to buy the castle because he wanted to come to return to her.
Right,
it's like a place in the sun, is it?
Kind of, yeah. It's the most messed up,
with rats.
Messed up episode of Place in the Sun I've ever seen.
Incredible.
Wow. So Gavin and Stacey's, the Christmas Day Gavin and Stacey, was that the last one ever?
Apparently, yes.
Because I say finale, but I have a feeling they've said that three times before.
Before we get there, I will say just before we came on air as well, the BAFTA's long list came out on the subject of Saoirse, and she's getting a look in there for Best Actress.
Well, of course
again,
she would.
That's not the official nominations, but
that's
for the
outrun.
Yeah, and also NECAP are on the long list for Best Film, so... wait and see what's going to happen there. That could be exciting.
That was a fantastic film.
Did you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it?
And
brilliant.
It's not just funny. I found it weirdly uplifting.
Oh, yeah,
well.
100%. How about that cameo, though?
Yeah.
That cameo, that made that film for me. It was brilliant.
Which cameo?
It's radicalised a lot of people in terms of the Irish
probably
language
did,
and the Changa.
That was, if it's the person I think you're referring to, that was, they actually agreed to do that. It wasn't CGI or anything.
No. They got him to do it. He turned up and did it. Yeah, I saw behind the scene footage, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if they just showed him the script, I'm sure he would have probably agreed.
Oh, 100%. But again.
Also the funniest sex scenes in movie history.
Yes.
I think. Absolutely.
Very, very funny. Very funny.
Yeah. Chucky Arlaw.
and you gave me grief. No, never mind.
Yeah.
You've given me grief before for my.
Of course I have.
Socialist Republican leaning.
Yeah, of course I have.
Now you're saying, oh, kneecap's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I do it, it's a problem, apparently.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. I'm glad you understand the situation.
To the other end of the scale, then, from kneecap to Gavin and Stacey.
Yes,
They've said this is the last one, and I watched a bit of it. I'm not a Gavin and Stacey person, and I admitted this in the lead up to Christmas, and I thought I was going to be shot in the head. I'm not here to yuck anyone's yums. You love it. I just never got on the train, and it's clearly too late for me now. But I watched a bit of the behind the scenes, and James Corden and Ruth Jones have said, this is the definitive end. Now, I mean, there's nothing to say that in 20 years' time they don't come back and write a prequel, whatever, a sequel. They all have kids at this point. I don't know. Anyway, huge, huge viewership, like the most in BBC history. So I think across a 7-day period. And again, this is just including BBC and iPlayer. This doesn't even include Ireland because obviously it did air over here on RT. 18.2 million viewers. Nuts. They said if you were to take out like news and sports events from, I think the research that they're able to, or they're able to look back up to, I think it's 2007. If they were to take out news and sports events from that list, it'd be the top BBC One show like across all of those years, as far back as 2007. I think it's only beaten by the 2012 Olympic Games, obviously the opening and the closing ceremonies. Nuts. Like, as much as, again, I'm poo-pooing people watching Gavin and Stacey and me saying I'm not into it. People were obsessed with this show, obsessed with these characters. And it was funny, like, this kind of, the little that I know about it was, I think that it was originally on BBC Two and kind of wasn't languishing in the slot that whatever it was, but it was essentially whenever it moved to the new slot, it just thrived.
Found the audience.
Yeah, it just totally found the audience.
There's a huge amount of love for that show.
Yeah, really? People do. And it's like, and again, not my thing, but it's a great to be, see a sitcom and a comedy celebrated in a time when they're kind of few and far between.
True, yeah.
And we're seeing kind of success
like,
for them.
It's weird because like, in any other context, most British people hate James Corden, but in Gavin and Stacey,
yeah,
you know.
But I think this has also been a bit of, intentionally or unintentionally, like this has really rehabbed him, especially the behind the scenes. And the, like, I found myself, my cockles warming to him, and I said, right, I need to turn this off before things go too awry. But yeah, crazy. People love Gavin and Stacey. Now, and I'd love to know, again, even including the Irish viewership, because if that's just the UK, depending.
Yeah. Now, this is the story that Brian's been waiting to hear about. He'll love this one.
Oh, yeah.
Meghan Markle's doing a cooking show.
Oh, there it is! Oh, my God.
Of course she is.
Who is she? Martha Stewart? Like, come on. Like.
Oh, why are people getting angry about a woman cooking? Let her off. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I love that she was waiting for January 1st and she was hovering over the reactivate button over Instagram, and then she said, bam! And then she said, I have another cooking show on Netflix. Deal with it.
Yeah. Oh, did she have one before?
Sorry, she has a cooking show on Netflix. But this is part of their multi-part deal. This is called With Love, Meghan. It's an eight-part series. It launches on 15th of January. And it's her cooking. She's sharing gardening tips. She's sharing hosting tips. She's going to have lots of celebs over and cook for them. Mindy Kaling was seen in the promo. Her former Suits co-star, Abigail Spencer, is also going to be there. I don't know. This has annoyed all the right people. I'm like, let her off.
There's one clip where she has frozen flowers into ice cubes to put them in tall Slim Jims, and I'm like, no.
Brilliant. Perfect.
No. I will not watch this show.
I don't know.
Well, who would have the time to do that?
Oh, well, she's a Meghan to attend also, by the way. Yeah.
And she has staff to do this.
Indeed.
But it's just really a celebrity fest, really. It's just like her and her celebrity chums drinking
to be like,
out Slim Jims with their frozen flowers
in
them.
Peace out, Charles et al, you know, like...
And will your man, the husband, be on it?
There's a
brief clip of him I saw.
From the trailer, they're seen hugging, but I mean, I'm sure he'll be roped
it's
in.
It's a stand-in.
Yeah, it's a body double.
It's not actually him at all.
Definitely a body double.
Right, will Kneecap be on it?
God, I hope so.
That's the edition I want to watch. I want to watch the edition with Kneecap on it.
Oh. I'd watch that. I mean, yeah. I'd watch that.
You mixed up their hair. Cocaine and the ketamine again. One Texas says Meghan will be selling her feet on OnlyFans next. Price is right.
Slay. I love women entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
I support a woman's rights and a woman's wrongs.
Exactly,
okay?
Brian. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. No matter what they do.
Yeah.
I started rewatching Fringe the other week. I completely forgot Meghan Markle was in the show. Bit of a surprise when she showed up in season two.
Was she?
I didn't know she was in that. I thought she did Deal or No Deal and Suits and then Royal Life, respectfully. I've never watched Fringe though, but I didn't know she was in it.
I have a vision. I don't.
Oh, sorry. She's a brief cameo in the reboot of 90210 as well. She's getting with one of the lads in a car.
Amazing.
Okay, so we all need to rewatch or watch Fringe. There you go.
Okay, that's if she was in it, this person, because I'm just reading out these things. No one's fact checked this rubbish. Completely made up. Is Netflix have given the pair of them a load of money? And might Netflix be starting to think, a cooking show?
Maybe. Well, we saw what happened with the Spotify deal where it was like they gave them loads and loads of money and then Meghan did the podcast and
nobody listened.
Yeah. Well, nothing came of it. Like, they've done a lot with the Netflix deal. They had the Heart of Invictus, that documentary.
Wasn't there a nature documentary as well or something?
There was like a kids TV show. I don't know if that came out.
You see, the fact that no one can remember tells its own story. Where's the big hit?
The Heart of Invictus thing was good. But again, I will say that's because it wasn't about them, with all respect to them. And then there was a Live to Lead thing, which is also about kind of like looking at leaders who were dedicated to social justice and stuff like that. But... Again, how many people, you know what I mean? People are going to watch the With Love Meghan thing because people either love her or hate her, or they're hate watching, or they're actually genuinely interested, you know?
And presumably, if it's an American audience, really, for that, they're going to
Oh, love yes.
It. Yeah. Like, I know the side of the pond, it's a little bit jaded. Like,
they're way warmer
jaded.
On her. Yeah.
But if, say, like, they did a version of Squid Games where you had, like, 20 men who all look like Prince Harry and 19 of them are going to die. I'm just spitballing here. I'm just the elevator pitch.
We just see we need to get Netflix on the phone. This is gold.
This is absolute gold. Anyway, we're not just having a random go at this. Are they a royal couple? Whatever they are.
Sussex.
They're technically still the Sussexes, yeah.
Okay, the Sussexes. It's because our next wine has a link to Meghan Markle. It's our favourite wine.
It's not. I don't have that wine. I nearly have it.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
so we have a wine that she probably wouldn't buy.
Definitely she would buy it.
Oh, would she?
She could get her hands on it.
Okay.
Sold on allocation only. Now, just before we start, I have brought two red wines with me. The red wine, the Meghan Markle one, is not the one that's in the glass. So we'll talk about Meghan Markle and then we'll go back to the glass.
Okay.
So going along the theme of what if you got a lovely bottle of wine for Christmas and then you didn't know what to do with it. Say, for example, someone knew you loved wine so much that they got you something you couldn't buy anywhere. And that's that example that I have here. So it is called Flaccinello. It's produced by...
Sorry.
I know. Yeah. And you know, I worked in a company in the UK. We used to sell it and it was always nicknamed the Flatch.
Yeah.
I know. And I stopped laughing at it. You know, you get so conditioned to it that it's not even funny anymore. But anyway, so Flaccinello from Fontodi is a Super Tuscan. And the Super Tuscan category came out of in the 60s and 70s.
We've gone down a dad joke rabbit hole there.
I'm sorry.
You can pop a Viagra in as well.
No. I'm hearing Super Mario. It's like, oh, I'm away.
Super
no.
Tuscan and Flaccinello. So Chianti in the 70s was allowed to have white grapes in it. And so it was all quantity over quality. It was thin and insipid and so bad, in fact, that people who produced high quality Chianti wanted to have nothing to do with it. So they kind of stepped away, moved out of the Chianti region, took the same grapes and made them in the Bulgari coast. And they got named as a Super Tuscan. And there's a couple of really famous ones. Tignanello, which is Meghan Markle's, the name of her blog, because... What did she say when she discovered Tignanello?
She got it.
She got it. She knew that's when she was getting it, when she tried the Tig.
Sassicaia is another one of them. They're built to last. This is a 2019 vintage, this Flaccinello. And this particular one, it can age for 20, 25 years.
Oh, gosh.
And it's funny, the best thing about this, and like why, it's €145. And I was saying, I know.
That's €145.
Yeah, the flat.
Jeez.
But you can't buy it even if you wanted it. But to the point where...
Because how many bottles would they produce in a year?
Oh, I think it's maybe 20,000, which sounds like a lot, but it's tiny. There's like 400 million bottles of champagne made every year.
Yeah.
Like, it's tiny production. But I had a bottle of it in our shop on the shelf.
No wonder you didn't open it.
Yeah, no, I definitely wasn't opening that. Yeah. I couldn't open it. And a young woman had come in with her mum and they were picking out bottles just before Christmas. And she had a few bottles of Montepulciano and that. And I was like, wow, who's picked out this wine? And I was like, oh, I've got it. And I was like, you know, it's €145. And she thought, oh no, I thought it was €14.50. No, lady.
Okay.
No, lady. But anyway, look, it's built to last. So
did she buy it anyway?
No, she did not. It went straight back. And she didn't even touch it again for fear of breaking it. But if you were, say, got married in 2019 or had a kid in 2019, like, why would you spend €145 on something? So that, say, on the 21st birthday or 20 or 30 wedding anniversary, if you want something to taste good after 20 or 30 years, this is the bottle of wine that would do it. So there is a value in it. And I had tried it recently enough and it's amazing for a wine that's, you know, 5 years old.
And what's the age in that then?
So it's 2019 now.
Right? So it's only 5 years.
Yeah. It's built to last. And when I tried it, I was like, wow, not that I was disappointed, but because it hadn't even started to show. And for a bottle of wine, if you've got a nice bottle for Christmas or for whenever, like, you need an element of instant gratification when you open a bottle of wine. When you open it, it needs to smell nice. You need to want to drink it. It needs to give you some joy and pleasure. And sometimes in those wines that are built to age, you're not going to get that for 5 to 10 years. You have to wait for a little bit before it has that. I can only describe it as instant gratification. You smell it, it's delicious. You drink it, it's delicious.
Yeah, though, if you drop £150 and wait 10 years and then it turns out to be corked.
Well, that's what I was going to... Well, corked is one thing.
Rotten.
Yeah, I know. I used Brian's favourite tool, ChatGPT, to come up with some. I know. Hold it together, Brian. Yeah. To come up
You're
with
setting
some.
Setting me off today, man. What are you doing? All right.
To come up with, I was like, you know, Googling questions of if you were like, you know,
if you had a bottle at Christmas, you'd know what to do with. And one of the things was, don't worry if it doesn't taste nice. You can always put it to good use by cooking with it. I'm like, 145 euro.
Yeah.
It's got to be good. It's
yeah,
got to be good.
Yeah, you need to be 100% yeah. guaranteed. So what's in our glass? This isn't 100.
This no, is... so this is 29.90. So it's still okay. in the premium section, but it was mainly, I suppose, to show a couple of things. So this is Lopez de Heredia Vinotondonia Rioja 2016. It's already 8 years old.
Oh,
so
gosh,
it's already
yeah.
got a bit of age in it.
Yeah.
And again, it's going back to, okay, I got a nice bottle of wine at Christmas. I don't know what to do with it. I didn't drink it, which is a good thing. So what am I going to do? What do you think? It's delicious.
Oh, it's gorgeous. That's
it's
absolutely
like
beautiful.
Divine.
Yeah.
Instant gratification.
Yeah.
That's what you, when you drink a glass of wine, it's got to have that. So what do you do with a nice bottle? So this one, or how do you know, 2016, it's 8 years old. It's implying that if someone's held onto it for 8 years, there's something good about it. That will give you an indication.
Like as a rule of thumb, is that always a good thing to look out for? Look at the date on the bottle.
Yeah,
the older
vintage.
If it's a red wine, obviously. Yeah,
yeah, the vintage. And what you want to do, like with older bottles of wine, you need to lie them sideways to keep the cork moist.
Mm.
Because if you don't, and it's upright, say if I left that upright for 20 years, the Flaccinello, the cork would dry and contract and then air would get in. And wine is like milk, it goes off. So imagine having milk in, you know, in your cupboard for 20 years, effectively. So the whole thing is to keep your cork moist. And it's converse to whiskey. Do you ever get a nice bottle of whiskey in the house maybe and you think, okay, well,
yeah.
Yeah. So whereas wine, you have to lie sideways to keep the cork moist. Whiskey, you have to keep it upright because alcohol will burn through the cork.
Yes.
And the whiskey.
Yeah.
So it's a really important one. And the other thing I was just going to say is if you got a bottle of champagne for Christmas and you think, I'll keep that for a good occasion and you keep it for 4 or 5 years, it'll be dead. Champagne, when it's bottled and released, it's meant to be drunk. The longer you leave it, the worse it will get.
Yeah.
So if you got champagne for Christmas, put it in your fridge and drink it.
How long
possible.
Have I got? Because I have a bottle of champagne in the fridge, but I'm like, it's like,
I'd say you got about a week.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Because that's been there for like about 6 months. Like, so.
No, I'd say you've got a year and a half.
All
but
right, okay.
like, keep it in the fridge and find it. Yeah, like they're meant to be drunk. There's a date on a bottle of champagne called the degorgement date. So if anyone's got a bottle like of champagne, it'll see the degorgement date. And that's the date at which they took out the like holding cork and put in the final cork. Okay.
Yeah.
Took out the bit of gunk, for want of a better description. Yeah. And then it's ready to go. So the degorgement date tells you when it's ready to be drunk. And the further away that is in the past, champagne will lose all its freshness. Outside of a couple of few, like Dom Perignon, those big vintage ones.
Yeah, but,
yeah. Those bottles of champagne, put them in the fridge, find a reason to drink them.
Yeah. There you go. That was very educational. Secret to a good wine and a good marriage. Keep the cork moist. Right, we'll move on to our second movie. That is We Live in Time. Here's a clip.
This was all you. All you had on you. Chocolate orange was pronounced dead at the scene. I'm Alma, by the way.
Albert.
Alma.
Tobias. So sorry, but do we know each other?
Oh. Yeah, no. Sorry. I ran you over.
Right, that's We Live in Time, which, as Brian was telling us earlier on, it's not a straightforward narrative. You're jumping back and forth. Can that be just a gimmick, though?
Yes. Not in this case, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think the whole... I suppose what the film kind of talks about is the idea of memory. And there was a review from Eamon Warman in Empire, and he talked about it, and it was a great point. I'm mad I didn't make it myself. But it's the idea of, like, when we remember things, we remember it in waves. We don't necessarily remember the entire conversation. We don't remember every part of it. But we remember a vibe, we remember a feeling, we remember kind of, like, big points of it. And that's really what the film is about, is the idea of, like, you know, a marriage and a relationship or whatever. It's really built up of, like, kind of small moments. And it could be something stupid. Like, you know, in this film, like, Florence Pugh kind of knocks over Andrew Garfield's character, and that's how they initially meet. And it's that kind of like stupid little thing. And initially you're kind of thinking, oh God, this is going to be Richard Curtis, Notting Hill crap. Yes. And it's not.
I will not have that word, Notting Hill, Brian.
We'll have to take that one outside.
I think you didn't read the room there.
I think you didn't read the room.
Whatever about Notting Hill, grand. Don't sit there. Do not sit there and tell me that Love Actually is...
I love it so much.
Yeah, people love Love Actually. People watch it every year.
We watched it. Dangerous territory here.
Yeah. It took us three nights to watch it this year. We really wanted to digest it.
Continue on there. I'm going to shun you. Write that. Yeah, so this is much... there's a lot more going on to it, I would say, than a Richard Curtis film. Because it's really... I mean, it's not just like the subject matter and the idea of like, you know, what happens when you make a choice and, you know, you then have to live with the consequences of it afterwards. It's a little, a tiny, tiny little bit like Past Lives, which I loved. I will not shut up about Past Lives. It was brilliant. This is in a similar vein. And the essentially what happens in this is that, it told chronologically, Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield meet, fall in love, they decide to get married, they try for a child, they're having trouble with it. They're basically told, okay, you have a couple of choices here. You can either have a partial hysterectomy or a full hysterectomy, or you can run your chances and see what happens. They end up having a child, but then, of course, comes back and, you know, that's all that. And that's not given away. I mean, that's in the trailer and all the things, so I'm not giving anything away. But the story is told kind of, you know, this part here, this part there, and then they move it around and da-da-da-da-da. And the idea behind that is that knowing what's going to happen doesn't change the fact that, you know, you're still committed to this person, you're still committed to the relationship. Even if you know it's going to end, you don't care because you care about the person and you want to commit to it. And again, that's something that like Arrival did, if you ever saw that. It's again that idea of even if you know the ending of the story, it doesn't matter, you're still committed to that person and that's what's important. And I think that's what the film gets at. And, you know, there have been comparisons to Love Story, which was the film from the 70s with Ryan O'Neill and Ally McGraw. I mean, yeah, on the surface, yeah, there is a bit of a connection there in that it's about a love story and it's about a young couple and, you know, kind of fated to be, you know, end in tears and all the rest of it. But I would argue this has more going on in that, one, it's funny. It has funny moments in it. Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield, like I said, the chemistry that they have together is so potent. If I knew nothing about them, I'd nearly swear they were actually dating. Like, it's that strong, like they're that good together. Andrew Garfield as well, I mean, you know, he's one of these actors, I think, and it's more of a kind of a recent thing, I guess, but like there's a kind of a vein of actors now, Paul Mescal is one of them as well, that they're really good at communicating anguish and communicating vulnerability in a way that doesn't feel hokey and sentimental, but it actually feels lived in and real. Whereas Florence Pugh, it's much more sort of like, okay, right, this is what's happening. I have to deal with this now. Here's what's going to happen. Much more kind of into it and just like, yep, we have to do this, this and this, this in order for this to happen. And again, that kind of the change up in the dynamics in a relationship is interesting. You know, that sort of way that he's a little bit more kind of like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And she's like, well, we just have to live with it now and blah. So I love this. I thought this was great. If you're looking for something a little bit easier than Nosferatu, this is definitely worth the watch.
Okay, right. And just before we go, because people might have seen this story earlier in the week, Neil Young has said he wasn't going to play Glastonbury because it's all corporate, man. And now he's changed his mind.
He has changed his mind, yeah. He said he didn't want to do it initially because of the BBC's involvement. Obviously, the BBC has been involved, I think, since the late 90s, 1997, obviously, showcasing the festival and covering it, stuff like that. He said he wanted us to do a lot of things in a way we were not interested in. But a new post on his website today, he said, due to an error in the information received, I decided to not play the Glastonbury Festival, which I've always loved. Happily, the festival is now back on our itinerary and we look forward to playing. Hope to see you there. Which translates to someone added an extra zero, or they were just like,
they were going to sue him, I'd say.
No, well, also, like, because he's played before, and they do a deal about how many of his songs they can transmit, which happened the last time in 2009, I looked it up. I think he just thought, oh, corporation man is like, you know, McDonald's or something.
Yeah,
you know,
but
and
like,
he didn't
this
really,
is the thi- like,
he
I
hadn't
didn't,
fully woken up.
Yeah, the whole argument about being like, well, I don't know if he said that he didn't realise the BBC were involved, but he didn't like how much the BBC were involved. And then I kind of argue, as you just said, you did it previously. You got your way to maintain the life experience, which I think is a fair enough argument.
Mm, sure,
but
yeah.
At the same time, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, yeah. If you got tickets, which very few people did, but some people did, he will be on the pyramid stage.
Apparently, fun fact, he was due to play it in the 90s. But then had to pull out of the tour because he cut his finger when he was making a jam sandwich.
Is that true? Possible.
That is true. Absolutely. 100% true. Yeah. You can look that up. That's our last for today. Thanks to Fionnuala, Michelle and Brian.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.